All right, Scott Spears here at the Heinz History Museum, WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. 2 hours left in our broadcast today, and I do want to make the point to say again, because it's very, very important that 3.5 hours away from Pittsburgh is where we are in Ohio. It's a very easy trip. I took it this morning. You could come here on a day trip and really enjoy this treasure that is the Heinz History Museum. We are only on one floor, the Mr. Rogers floor here. There are many other floors that we have not visited that you will want to take your kids and family and come to. And to tell us a little bit about that is the curator of the Heinz History Museum, Emily. Emily, come over and have a seat here.
Thank you.
So good to meet you. Now, what was your last name, Emily?
Ruby.
Ruby, I thought that. I didn't want to say the wrong thing, though. Emily Ruby, the curator here at the Heinz History Museum.
One of them.
One of them. Oh, how many are there? How many?
There is about 6 of us or so.
But you're my favorite.
Of course, yes.
You are my favorite. tell us, if I am coming from Ohio and I want to come to the Heinz History Museum, what must I check out besides what we're looking at today?
Wow. We have 6 floors of exhibits, so there's something for everyone. We're also the home of the Western Pennsylvania Sports Museum. Can you hear me?
Sorry. Yeah, we'll just put that a little closer.
So if you're into sports, there's that. You can see Pittsburgh, a tradition of innovation, and learn about general Pittsburgh history. But this is actually my favorite gallery, Special Collections, because this is where you get to see the stuff, all the objects that are part of our collection. We only have about 15% of our collection on display. So this is a way of getting some of those objects out there for the people, the public to see.
Now, what is your favorite part of this area?
Well, my personal favorite part is the textile collection, which is to my right, and that's because textiles are my kind of favorite area to work with, and I love the going through the hundreds of boxes of textiles that we have and changing out that gallery. So,
this does not seem like, I'm sure it is work, but I mean it in this way. It seems like fun. It seems like,
yes,
something you would enjoy every single day. What's a typical day like?
Every day is different. I deal a lot with the public who want to donate objects to the collection, so a day for me could consist of going out to someone's home and looking at items they have. And then I might come back and do research for an exhibition. I might help to dress a mannequin with some textiles for an exhibition. So it can be all sorts of things.
What is the oldest artifact you have here in the museum? The oldest one you can think of.
It's probably the arrowheads that we have in our Meadowcroft collection.
What would you say is the most visited part of the first floor? When I came in, we kind of zipped by it because,
yes,
we were getting up here. But boy, the bus down there.
People love the trolley.
The trolley. And tell people about the trolley when you first walk in.
So that is a historic Pittsburgh trolley, and of course they used to run all through the city, and so there's a lot of nostalgia associated with trolleys for older Pittsburghers. And so that is actually on an old railroad track that came into this building when it was an ice house. So it's sitting on that original track.
Right. 7 floors of artifacts.
6 floors. The 7th is where all the work's done.
That's where all the work's done. I understand. 6 floors of artifacts. How many items would you say are in this collection?
If you go down to the item level, hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands.
If we're counting photographs and all the small pins and buttons and types of things like that. So.
When I came through, I mean, obviously we'd be remiss. This is the Heinz Museum. Right. We're talking ketchup.
That is one of our exhibitions.
I saw a lot of tomatoes when I rounded the corner.
Yeah, so we have the corporate collection from the Heinz Company. It came here in the 1990s, and we redid our gallery space that talks about the Heinz Company specifically in 2014. So that's a nice new exhibition as well.
Obviously, we know ketchup, but why are the Heinz and the Heinz name such a big deal in Pittsburgh?
Well, the family was really influential, and obviously, right, the Heinz Company employs a lot of people, but they also gave a lot of money, started the Heinz Foundation, helped restore a lot of buildings and fund institutions, and Senator John Heinz. So we're actually the Senator John Heinz History Center.
Oh.
And so it was named in honor of him. He died tragically in a plane accident, but he was a very popular senator.
I wore red today. Because we're coming to the Heinz Museum. I said, well, you got to wear red. The museum is very accessible. There's a lot of parking around here. Mm-hmm. But, boy, it fills up fast.
Yeah.
Well, how many people come visit the museum? Is there a total every year about how many people come through here?
They say like 100,000 or so. I'm looking at our marketing person. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have it off the top of my head, but.
A lot of people, and they mm-hmm. seem to enjoy it. What is admission if people do want to come? How much is the admission?
It is 16.
16. Okay, and that's all ages?
That is adult admission, and there is a reduced rate for children and seniors.
And seniors.
And I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think around
65
12.
And up? 62 and up? 5 and under are free. There you go. Well, you can bring your family here. This is... when you walk through the Mr. Rogers part here with a couple days of Mr. Rogers activity going on here in Pittsburgh, what does it mean to you to be in here right now where there's his living room 5 feet away?
Right. It's wonderful to see when families come through the space how meaningful it is to them. And it's wonderful for us to be the home of the Mr. Rogers exhibition because it's such an important part of Western Pennsylvania and national history, and so that we can host that and share it with the, our community and the national community is means a lot.
Now, what are some other things going on at Pittsburgh that you guys are involved with?
Upcoming exhibitions?
Yeah.
So we have an exciting exhibit this fall. The Apollo 11 capsule will be here. So that's Destination Moon exhibition. So we're really excited to be hosting that, one of four places in the United States. So from Ohio, you got to get here for that.
Well, you do have to come here. We're all about that. I mean, we built the crawler in Marion, Ohio.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of Ohio connections to the space.
Oh, John
program.
Glenn.
Yeah.
My goodness. It's countless.
Yes.
So you are from the textile. You like the textiles.
I like the textiles, but yeah, I deal with all the objects that we have, but textiles are my personal favorite.
Now, why is that?
I love clothes, fashion history.
Just love the clothes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see fashions as I'm looking over your shoulder. Mm-hmm. Now, the audience can't see those, unfortunately, but what are we looking at there? What importance are these we're looking at over here?
So these are all 1920s textiles, and they go with our exhibition that's down on the first floor on Prohibition. So that's a touring exhibition called American Spirits, and that is here for a few more months, I believe till June. And so we try to do the textile gallery and theme with other things going on in the museum. So. All 20s.
Emily, it's been fascinating. Thank you for hosting us here today. It's been a pleasure. And thank
wonderful
you for letting us come in.
Yeah.
Emily Ruby, one of the curators of the Heinz History Museum, which is where we're doing our live broadcast today here, WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Now, we do have Walt Tsang here, who's going to come and join us again. Now, remember, Walt took the picture that will become the stamp in just 24 hours. We are right around the corner. And as I look at the video screen here, again, there's the castle. King Friday is looking over my shoulder. He's keeping an eye out as we look, and Walt's going to come back in here. As I say, he took the picture that will become the stamp tomorrow. Walt, it's so good to sit down with you here and have a little conversation.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Walt, you flew in?
I flew in.
From?
Phoenix.
So to come back to Pittsburgh...
Well, I landed at the airport with a polo shirt and sandals on, and I said, you've got the air conditioning turned up way too high here.
It was a little, and it's the second day of spring.
It is?
This is spring. Oh, yeah, Midwest.
And I thought you were an honest man.
I know. Fred Rogers, when did you meet him?
I met him in the early 70s. Actually, I got out of the service in 1968, and that was the same year that he began his show. And I met him a couple of years after that. It's probably 1972, 73.
First time you met him, what'd you think?
I I guess
where I'm going with that is I hear a lot of people who knew him say there was no difference between the guy you saw on television.
Oh, no, that wasn't my first impression. Was I went to him as a client. I was doing work for WQED for their design center. And one of the designers there said, maybe you would want to meet the neighborhood because they use photography. And I said, well, yeah, sure. And I was just starting out. And I went up. I probably met David Newell first and Hilla. And I met Fred on our first photo shoot. My first project with him, as I mentioned earlier, was a series of labels for video cassettes. Do you remember video cassettes?
I do remember video cassettes. I do.
So I was doing labels, and the first series was on a child's first visit, or first airplane ride, first trip to the hospital, first visit to the zoo. So we went on location and we did photographs, depicting families and airline pilots and zookeepers and whatnot. And then the next series that were on emotions, like fear, anger, and love. And so that's those are my first projects for Fred, and I did a children's book for him called Who Am I? And Google Mr. Rogers, all right? Not to boast, but those are all my pictures.
All your pictures.
Those are all. I worked with him for 15 years.
Why do you think you were the guy?
I told the story earlier how we connected. We were doing the first one on love was the first emotion that we were dealing with. And we were in my studio. I had a small hole-in-the-wall studio when I first started out. And Fred and his crew were there. And I had the King Friday and the Queen on light stands, all right? And so being on Love, Fred was being made up. And this was like just after the Love era of the 60s. So I took a pencil and I stuck it under King Friday's skirt. All right? That's on Love, right? Mm. So I'm looking around and I'm getting these looks from, these people I had just met, thinking to myself, this could possibly be the last photo assignment I have for Mr. Rogers. So Fred came in from makeup and he looked down at the King and he says, "My King Friday, aren't we feeling amorous this morning?" And we looked at each other and just...
connected.
That was it.
Connected. What would he think of... this being a part of a museum, tomorrow, the big stamp unveiling?
If it's about him, he wouldn't think much about it, but if it's for the kids and if it's for the public, it's very important to him. As far as accolades, I don't think they matter.
What do you think it was about him that made him so centered in life? He knew what he wanted to do.
You answered your own question.
Yeah, he knew it.
He knew what he wanted to do, yeah. I knew I was... Photography chose me, all right, his working with people, especially kids, that chose him.
That chose him.
That chose him.
What, we always hear of him being a minister, what part of that career do you think helped him in his television career?
I'm afraid to use the word morality and ethics today because it's scarce. Mm. I don't know. I can't answer for him. I don't know why. There's an attraction. I was raised Catholic, and religion's good. I mean, it teaches a person what's right, or how to think about doing what's right. Not necessarily. That doesn't mean you're going to do it. I don't know why he wanted to be a minister. I guess if I had to guess, which is what I'm doing now, is that he had a message and he was looking for a platform, a venue, to do it. And it wasn't a church, it was a TV station. Right? So that was his church.
For 40 years, almost, he does this program, over 30. You were with him until the end?
Yes.
What was the end like?
The last...
We see pictures of the last day just over our shoulder here.
don't make me cry. Yeah. The last photo shoot I did, there was a break in the programming for a while where I wasn't doing any photography, and the shoot that the stamp came from was a final shoot of him and the entire neighborhood. I think it was a 1 or 2 day shoot with Fred and X the Owl and all of the characters. And that was for, I guess, historical reasons or just promotional reasons. And that was the last assignment, and that's where the image for the stamp was produced.
Do you think he was ready to stop?
Well, he had tried another show called, what was it called? Dead Air, right? Dead Air.
No, you know what's weird, Walt? When you do Dead Air, which is usually a bad thing in radio, we hear Fred's voice singing. Do you hear it?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's weird, but it's nice in a way. Well, hearing him, I mean, this guy, I mean, I never had the pleasure of meeting him. He's right there. He's right, and you were there.
He was always calm.
He was always calm, so you never knew.
He was what he was on television is what he was in real life. And he was he's the most honest, sincere person I ever met in my life.
33 years, 68 to 2001. Was there any emotion in him in the last episode? He didn't say it was the last episode, did he? I don't recall that.
I don't recall either.
Yeah, I think
I don't recall. But he did try another show. I'm trying to remember the thing. But he was the only, Old Friends, New Friends.
Oh, okay.
That was a series that he had tried. I don't know how long, a year or two he had done it. And my name was from Nantucket. Actually, my ex-wife was from a place in Nantucket, right next to, they call it the Crooked House or something. She said, yeah, I was a friend, a friend. Well, there was a woman up there that had, I don't know if she took care of the lighthouse or she did some work up there, but Fred had interviewed her. And it was a beautiful interview, and she was part of that show that he was trying to do, was the Old Friends, New Friends idea. And I think it went on for a short period. I don't know if it took off. But apparently he was looking for something to try, something new. The same thing for 40 years is you run out of things to say, want to try new things, I would imagine.
Being with him for 33 years, the show ended in August of 2001,
yes.
And he passed away less than 2 years later.
Yeah, from stomach cancer.
When did you hear of that? That he was ill.
Well, actually, I attended the services.
Oh, you went to
I went to the services at Heinz Hall, and his son spoke, and the place was packed. It was just jam packed.
Did you know he was ill?
I didn't know he was ill, no.
So when somebody called you and said he had left us, what hit you?
How, who poisoned this man? He was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
And he died of stomach cancer. I have thoughts about Monsanto. Excuse me.
Well, you never know. You never know.
Yeah. But he swam, he was healthy. And I know I was overweight, and all my friends kept giving me, you got to lose weight, I said, yeah, well, the guy that ate the pine cones, he was 49, he passed away, And I know Fred was healthy, and I mean, 74 is, and that's my age now. And I said, but my heroes are Chubby Checker, Fats Domino. I said, they're 85, they're 90 years old. And, they smoke, they drink, and they have fun. I said, so your diet advice and your exercise advice, I said, it's falling on deaf ears here. So I said, I feel good.
Well, you were on that. You worked with other people, David Newell, Mr. McFeely.
Oh, yeah.
Would you characterize David?
He's priceless, precious. His demeanor is just so low key, but he is so smart. what he did for the show, and how he managed it, was wonderful. A great guy, yeah. Mm.
When he got into the suit and became part of the show, for those who don't know, he's been to Ohio and visited us on three different occasions. And one of the things that surprised me the first time I saw him was the McFeely. It's not just a suit, but that's not the color of his hair. He does have any facial hair. He could be totally unknown if he walked through a group of people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, but he still, for three times for us, got in the suit. He still liked doing it.
Oh, yeah.
When he got in that, was that fun for you to see him do that, sing the song, do the bits?
He was always fun, yeah, especially when we did our photo shoots. You know, we did our photo shoots together. He was, he's almost bashful. You know, he's like I say, he underplays himself, his character. But he's a very bashful, but a very whole person.
Chef Brockett, a lot of people remember him very well, no longer with us. What was he like?
I don't know. I never met him. No.
When you would go to the set, what were your visits like?
It was all business. All right. I would set up. Generally, when I was, my main shoots were with notables that were there: Yo-Yo Ma, Big Bird, the Marsalis family, Wynton Marsalis. I would be there, and we would do portraits of Fred with these people. We did a shoot with Peggy Fleming with Fred on ice skates down at the arena, and that was fun. So I did him with other celebrities. Then we would update photographs of him, you know, every couple of years. Then we would update his portrait. We did work for billboards. There was always a nice billboard of him. You're greeting people coming in from Ohio, you know, to Pennsylvania. They were fun. Fred hated to have his picture taken. He said, "Well, you know, I hate to have my picture taken." I said, "Yeah, I know." He says, but it's fun when you're here. He says, "You're the only photographer I give myself to." It still brings tears to my eyes. That's probably the best compliment I ever had from anybody in my entire career.
Is there a moment in all those photo shoots that sticks out to you as most memorable?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
The Love Series.
Oh, you know. That one, I can understand why that would do it.
That was it. That's where we bonded. You know, I mean, that's where I felt we bonded, because I thought I was going to be gone. You know,
so he had a sense of humor.
Yeah, because I didn't know. I was, I guess, testing the water, too, to see, does he have a sense of humor?
When all the series is being done and all those celebrities that you just mentioned that you took pictures of him with came on, sometimes those people aren't as child-oriented as Fred might have been. Did they become that around him? Were they all amenable, accessible, nice people?
Well, the Marsalis has had a huge family. They love kids, all right? I met nobody that was there. I met nobody that wasn't as agreeable or as comfortable to be with or as giving and cooperative as anybody that was on the show.
Were you at one of the memorable episodes I remember where they had a guest star was when the Wicked Witch from The Wizard of Oz came on. Were you there for that?
No, I wasn't.
It's an interest because I cannot find really any other shows that she did. She came on and she dressed as a witch and then undressed herself. It was fascinating.
I wasn't there for that. So.
How many pictures of Fred do you think you took over the career?
3,000 or 4,000.
What'd you do with them all?
They're now with the family communications, you know, with the corporation.
Do you have a favorite picture?
Him.
Him?
Yeah, the one that's behind us.
Oh, this one right here?
Yeah, I did a poster of him putting his tennis shoes on.
Did he ever explain to you why he did that, why he took the suit coat off, why he put the sweater on, changed the shoes?
All right, I know the myth about the sweater. I've heard that.
He
was in the Marines, he was captives, he was never even in the service. But he wore the tennis shoes, I think, because regular shoes made too much noise. When he was working with Josie Carey, right? He started with her.
Right, musician.
And that's when he started developing the puppets, too. That he found that wearing tennis shoes in the you know, in the studio were quieter than the you know, wearing his regular shoes. So that's how I got to the tennis shoe.
When was the last time you saw the set before today?
Wow. Probably 2000, maybe?
18 years. What's it like to look at this thing behind us?
Don't even ask. I got my eyes are all dewy. When I hear his voice, you know, anytime I read about him, he's such a warm guy.
How were you informed that your picture was going to be the one that the stamp was going to be made?
I got a call from Film Communications, I think Brittany, and then I got a call from the USPS. I had to sign off on it, you know, sign the rights for them to use it. So I heard about it about 2.5 years ago, and I had to keep it quiet, which I did.
What will tomorrow mean to you, March 23rd, 2018?
I'm going to see a bunch of people that I haven't seen in a long time.
Mrs. Rogers will be there.
Yeah,
and David will be there.
And David, yeah.
And I think Joe Negri will be there.
Yep.
Hold the whole bunch.
So that's going to be fun. It's just going to be fun to be there, you know, as it was a great place to work for me, and the people, I'm going to be seeing people from the design center, Hedda, and people that I hadn't met that are new to the, you know, to the organization. I think it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
To have your work become a stamp, it's my understanding, I talked to a gentleman from the United States Postal Service yesterday, and tomorrow morning you will be able to go into any post office in the United States and get your picture.
Yeah, that's cool, huh?
Yeah.
If you want, I'll autograph every stamp.
I'll take you up on that. I'll take you, and a lot of people will. It's and you're on the internet. We should mention that you do have a website.
I do, yes.
You still working?
Not as a photographer.
Not as a photographer anymore.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It has to be very few people who've had their work immortalized on a stamp. That can't be a large number of people.
That's true.
Very few.
That's true.
Well,
I was impressed. I mean, when they called me, I said, great. You know, they submitted the image and they liked it. And then I began reading. My sister sent me an article. I think it was in Variety. It said they had gone through like 20,000 applications.
Yeah, that's about it.
That
every year.
That impressed me.
Every year. Every year.
Really?
Yeah. So that's,
oh my God,
to pick him. It's interesting because I don't remember there being such a commotion, and somebody at the post office said this to me just yesterday, that there will be a capacity crowd tomorrow. They've already reached capacity.
Yep.
And it's the second, at this point, most popular stamp, they won't know till it goes on sale tomorrow, behind Elvis.
Well, that's Fred, not me.
What does that say of the man's appeal of this show? That was a local Pittsburgh show, and a man who lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
He finally got what was coming to him.
He got what was coming to him. He certainly did.
Yeah.
What would he think of the movie that's coming?
I'll wait and see how it's...
Do you worry about that?
I'm not worried about it. No, I'm really anxious to see how they do it.
Yeah.
And to see what it's about, what they leave in, what they leave out, you know, how much of it's true. There's so much myth about, you know, there's so many mythology on you.
Everybody always says that he, just what you said in the beginning of this interview, that he did things if kids were impacted. If it was about him, no. Do you think the movie, the stamp even, that would be a little embarrassing for him?
No, it would just be another part of who he was.
He was.
Yeah, I don't think he would deny it, no. No, it would be disingenuous not to like it, and it would be disingenuous not to accept it, because it's real, it's deserving, and it's him.
What did you learn from him?
To shut up. To listen. My first conversation with him... I was on a shoot. We had a break in the assignment, and we began a conversation. And the disarming part of talking with him is he makes you talk. Right? He's not thinking about what he's going to say next. He's thinking about what you're going to say next. And most people don't do that. Right?
Do you think that's why he appealed to kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't intimidate them, yeah.
Did he have a favorite episode of the series that you know of?
One of the most significant ones was, I think it was an incident with the fish. I think the girl listened to the show. She was blind. And she had sent a note in or a phone call, something about, I want to make sure that Fred is feeding the fish. And so he would feed the fish and mention her name. I mean, that's, you know, that's the kind of caring this guy had. And you know, the attention that he had to people that responded to him. I know he didn't like opera because we were listening to, I was in the studio with him, we were listening to some operatic pieces for someone to be on his show. And I said, do you like opera, Fred? He says, no. He says, no, I don't like it either.
So there were things he didn't like.
There were things that, yeah, I wouldn't say he didn't like. It wasn't, he didn't look like he was having fun, but he did it.
Was there any, we all have downsides. Was there any downside to this man?
None that I mean, no, he was steady. He was, I don't know. And, you know, if there was something internal that bothered him, you know, that was, you know, a person, it never surfaced.
You know, it's funny, when we started plugging that we were going to be here at the Heinz History Museum, people do bring up those myths once and for all. You've seen the man in short sleeves, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the no tattoos.
He was never
no military background.
He was never a sniper.
When did that start? He was still around when that came about, didn't it?
I don't know. I'll tell you what. I'm going to Google that today and find out where that started.
Yeah.
I believe I started looking on a site about a year ago. Someone had mentioned that he was a sniper, and the reason he became a minister is because he was so upset with himself of killing a lot of people. And I'm like, Fred never, you know, that's the last thing Fred would do, you know, unless he did like a total, you know, Jekyll and Hyde change. But I said, I don't think. And he had an aviator's license, but he was never in the service. He went from college to working with, I think, NBC, all right? And he was on like Kate Smith, some of the old shows that were on. And then he had come here to Pittsburgh. I think he worked in Canada for a while, and then he came to Pittsburgh. In 1968, he started, and that's the same year I started my business.
You talked about one of the photos you took was Mr. Rogers and Big Bird.
Yeah.
Probably the two most beloved children's characters. What was it? Carol Spinney, I think, is Big Bird. What was that like?
Well, I had to raise my backdrop quite a bit.
Oh, I bet. How big is Big Bird?
It's about 9 feet.
Nine feet?
Yeah, it's really tall. It's big, 7, 8, 9 feet, but way bigger than Fred. And he said, hurry up, Walt. He said, this thing is really hard to wear. It was really heavy.
Yeah.
So that's the only negative thing. All right, 15 or 20 years that I heard, and that was nothing except this thing is heavy. You know, and I did the photo shoot. We got a great shot of him. Big Bird.
Why do you think he didn't like to have his picture taken?
Don't know.
Just wasn't?
I don't know.
That's different. It's an interesting thing for a man who was on television for 33 years.
Yeah, I guess it may not have been important to him. He knew it was important for the show, otherwise it wouldn't have happened. But when he sat in front of my camera, he just glowed. I mean, you got... Yeah, you could just see his spirit come out.
Come right through.
But he was good, yeah, he was good. It was the connection, I think, that did it. But, no, he just didn't like having his picture taken.
What was your last conversation with him like?
Wow.
Hmm.
it was probably during the shoot, you know, the final shoot with all the puppets and just little chit-chat. You know, I can't remember anything specific.
Would you call him a friend?
Wow. I call him beloved. If a definition of a friend is someone you hang out with, you know, at the bar or at the church, no. But he was a client and beloved. If you can expand the definition of friendship as, you know, mutual respect, a mutual connection, enduring qualities, enjoying each other's company, then he was a friend.
You know, it's interesting. You knew him 35 years. Was he the type of guy who said, 30 years, let's go out and eat? Let's come over to the house?
No.
So there was a little distance maybe between him and... Was he like that with other people? Did you ever see him gregarious?
Well, that's an excellent question. He was friendly and warm. No.
You can just...
He was very... contained, right? I guess I'm kind of like that myself, you know. I mean, I can be friendly, but I can also, I don't mind being alone either. No, he wasn't gregarious.
It's interesting because along with the movie and the stamp and this being the 50th year and his 90th birthday was Tuesday, a lot this year, this summer there's a documentary coming out.
Yes.
And from what I've read, very good documentary, but digs a little more into the man, Fred Rogers. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to misspeak because I haven't seen the documentary, but I guess he had written that he and his children had some moments in life. I think they talk about that in the documentary. I read that somewhere.
I've read it too.
Yeah.
I was at their house and they kind of kept to themselves. The first time I met them, I had been to Fred's house for a day. We spent a day there photographing and meeting his wife and photographing Fred and her at the piano. And I met John and James, but it was kind of out of the corner of my eye. I met them.
You were at the house. Joanne will be there tomorrow. I believe she's getting along well these days.
Good.
I believe 91 years old. Good for her. And she's going to be there tomorrow. You witnessed them. You took pictures of them. What was that relationship like?
It was 50s, 60s couples. You know, the men, women. It's kind of like my grandparents. You know, they loved each other, and they had the respect for each other's role. All right, it wasn't she's trying to be him and he's trying to be her. Fred was Fred and John was John. And they actually sat at the piano and they sang together, did a duet together. And my family was like that too. My mother was a pianist and my dad played the violin, and we used to sit around the piano and sing, and she actually had us go out and we're doing a four-part harmony when we're 6 years old. Yeah, so we used to entertain at my dad. He worked for U.S. Steel, and we used to do the Christmas show every year, so we would sing at the show, and we hated wearing our little suits and ties and especially during the rehearsals. I want to be outside. I don't want to be here singing these things.
I understand.
But Fred and John, I think very reserved, you know. I can't make a judgment. I just saw them, you know, and they were, I mean, when I'm there with a camera, he's public, right?
What do you know about Fred Rogers that we don't?
What a great guy he was, you know, yeah. That what he is, that he's the same person in real life as he is. Well, no, what am I saying? It's all real life. Fred is consistent. Yeah, he's a consistent person. He doesn't change when he's off camera.
Would he have ever thought that 15 years after his death, that this would all still be?
Oh, I hope he did. I mean, yeah.
It's a shame that he left us so early, because I think he had a lot still left he still wanted to do.
That's an answer for God.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
When you look at the series and you see the Daniel Tiger now and you hear all the news, knowing that you were a part of that in a rather big way, how does it make you feel?
Well, I'm glad to have been there. You know, I'm not. I'm not familiar with Daniel the Tiger. You know, I think they're doing a production in Canada now.
Yeah, I think
Daniel
so.
Daniel the Tiger. But I don't have a TV. I haven't had a TV in 10 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't like that buzz sound in the back of my head. There's plenty on my. I have a nice iMac.
Oh,
well,
there you go. There
so
you go.
What I want to watch, I can dial in.
You can do. Right? You can do.
But after Fred passed, I had no real connection other than David and I talked. You know, Mr. McFeely, we talked to each other.
What was it about photography that appealed to you?
I don't know. I do know. I was a rebel without a cause kind of kid, right, when I was in college, and I was a design major. And I was not all that keen about design. And I had a photo course in my sophomore year. I was at Carnegie Mellon. And this was like 1960, 61. And I bought a camera, an old Yashica D, $40 Yashica D, twin lens reflex. And they had the first black and white photo show at the school gallery. And I looked at my camera, and I was photographing something, I think a couple of students, and it just connected at that point. It connected with me. I mean, like I say, it chose me. I didn't choose it. And the black and white images, the photographs, kind of reflected my attitude and my mentality at the time. And I just kind of built on that. I tried to carry that through my work throughout my entire, 40 years of doing photography, to have just a little bit of an edge to the work, something that was just a little bit different. And it still carried that kind of, it was, I wouldn't say morbid, I'd say gritty. All right, gritty. Gritty. Yeah, a gritty. I try to keep that gritty look in my images. But it was the right thing. It went so fast.
Yeah.
I tell my kids now, I said, I'm 74 now. And I said to my kids, kids, one day you're going to wake up and you're going to be old. You won't feel old, but you're going to be old.
It blows by, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm still a man child. I still never grew up, and I never will.
Why did you stop taking pictures?
It got to be too impersonal, that people wanted to look at my work online. And I wanted to go see them in person to see if we would connect. You know, I said, because if you connect with somebody, you can do much better work. That was covered with the idea that I went to, after digital came in, I went to like non-silver processes. I started using Polaroid instant film materials, like instant black and white slide film, and I would colorize it, and Polaroid films, and using those and doing adapting Polaroid image techniques, enhancing them so that they could be used commercially. And so the best thing any craftsman or artist can offer to their client is something different. Because, you're inundated with advertising all the time. So I was trying my best to make it different, to do it. And the brave souls would go with it. The others would love the work. I would get a lot of work in the conventional sense, even though the work I was doing was non-conventional. But still, it still brought me a lot of work. Then Polaroid went out of business, and I used all the film that I had left. And I was getting older. There were a lot of younger photographers coming in. They were cutting prices. The thing that digital did, right, it turned me from being a photographer to actually being a pre-press operator. All right, I used to take pictures, make slides or negatives, They would go to the lab for processing, then the retoucher for enhancement, and then to the printers. They would scan them on their million-dollar scanners, and then they would go onto the press. Right, when digital came in, I took the pictures. I did the they were processed in my computer. They were retouched by me or my assistant, and we had the press ink press setups for every printer in the city, so that we could produce images that would reproduce on the press. So we went from being photographer to retoucher to pre-press operator, all right, and still getting paid the same amount and actually getting paid less. So we did more work for less, and I just said, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. We will see you tomorrow. We will be at the dedication tomorrow.
Nice to see you guys.
We're so glad Walt Tseng, who took the photograph that is the stamp that will be Mr. Rogers' stamp for here in eternity.
Right.
Yeah. We have one more hour to go here at the Heinz History Museum, so we will be on until 5, until they close the doors today. But we certainly thank Walt Tseng for stopping by, and we'll be back after this break with much more here on... Hey, flip that camera. See, that's direct from the set over here. Beautiful, beautiful pictures here. Why Walt, with 30 seconds, why when I take a picture does it look like somebody... I look like Mr. Snuffleupagus, and you take one and it looks great.
That's a great question.
Yeah, isn't it though? Yeah.
I'll get back to you on that sometime.
Thank you, but we'll talk tomorrow.
Well, when I taught photography, I would say, I'm not here to teach you how to take pictures.
You're listening
I'm here
to
WWE teach you how not to take pictures.
What do you think of the selfie?
Listen,
where they put it on themselves and they snap the picture?
Yeah.
No. Well, you also did.
Someone asked me if I had a picture of Fred and I.
Oh, my God.
I said, no, that was pre-selfie.
Pre-selfie, please.
You don't have a picture of you and he?
No.
None.
Oh,
Walt.
Young
comic
guy. No, we should have taken one. 30 years. We're done this hour. We're coming back.
Thank you. Let me tell you something. I have stories that someday you'll call me, and I'll tell you some things that happened with Sullivan.
We'll do a selfie. All right. Oh, really?
I did
well, everybody's been listening to the show. All my sisters said it sounded great.
Good.
Time I did
good.
It. So it was a coal mine disaster in Nova Scotia.
Glad to
he
hear
claimed
that.
That I did it just to have that
report.
I
take
a look on my mother. If you ever could talk to me again, well, you were going to talk to me again, and we'll talk about that because it's so interesting.
You know, maybe we'll do a whole show on Ed Sullivan sometime. That'd be fun.
Yeah, you get the people and have all the people talk about what happened and then how he said.
So
now I want to know something right now. He said to the elephant, "What are you going to do on my show?" Said to the elephant. And then the elephant made a plot.
You should have all of
Would you get somebody clean this up?
Now here's what I know about Ed Sullivan from reading.
Well, Ed Sullivan had his 11th anniversary, and I happened to be on the show. And he says to me, "Checky, you're not going to mess up on his show." I said, "No, and I promise I won't." You know. So I said to him, "You introduce me." No, he says, "What are you going to do?" I said, "Well, you're on 11 years. Introduce me as, because I just got back from Europe, he and his wife, Sylvia. Introduce me as a German comic that you found in Germany that you brought back to the United States." He said, "My God, that's a good idea." Then he said, "Tonight on our show, ladies and gentlemen, I was in Heidelberg with my wife." No, she was in Amsterdam. I was in Heidelberg. How come we didn't get to get? He said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I found this little German comic, and I think you're going to enjoy him. Here is Schickel Creeper with good shortcuts." So I came out. I said, "Ready, I want to tell you something. Mr. Sullivan, it has been on television 11 years. This is his anniversary. And there's a reason why he's been on 11 years. He don't sing, he don't dance, he don't tell jokes, he don't do anything. That's why he's been on." Well, he got crazy.
He
heard that.
Oh.
After the show, he chased me. He said, "You know, I got more talent in my little finger than anybody I ever had on this show. As you really believe that, you old as you're nuts, you know."
And legendary talk show host Dick Cavett.
I don't know. I can give you an exclusive here, I think.
Oh, let's do.
sitting there with Alfred Hitchcock during a commercial break. He's sort of looking straight ahead, not really right at me. And then he suddenly begins sort of speaking aloud to no one and says, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Grace Kelly.